Hello, this is Dave Jeffrey with you once again on the RPH Network. Welcome to our new program, Optimal Life. In the studio today with me is Lynn Perrott. Welcome to the program, Lynn.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
Now, you're a relatively new volunteer here at 2RPH. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm originally a Novocastrian, so from Newcastle. After growing up there, I went to a Goulburn Teachers College and then spent a few years teaching out in the country near Narrabri, and then ended up Western Sydney. So that's why I'm still in the Sydney area, actually. I was in and out of the public service. First of all, Department of Defence for a few years, places like Victoria Barracks and Garden Island and the Defence Force Library there. Did a library course. Then in 2000, went over to the Migration and Refugee Review Tribunal. I wasn't a decision maker there, but I just supported people doing a lot of paperwork, people that wanted to come to Australia or wanted to stay here and were first refused and then went to appeal at
Did
that
Did you get involved
tribunal.
With the politics of that at all? Be pretty busy over the last 10 years or so.
No, not really. I know it's had an impact on television, that organisation and the sort of decisions they made. It was just a regular job for me. And the other things I did, got involved with choir, for example, a couple of small ones in the festival chorus. Although I can't read music and I mainly play that by ear. And also I got involved with a couple of literary societies like Dickens Society and Jane Austen, attending some of their meetings. So that's been interesting.
Lynn, thank you very much for that. Okay, we're going to hear from you right now.
Well, this is an article from the Flourish magazine of summer 2018. It's entitled Make Someone's Day. Loneliness can affect physical and mental health and is a growing policy challenge for governments, including in Australia. A knock on the door for a chat or a short phone conversation can be the highlight of the day for many people who face loneliness and social isolation. This is a fact that Australian Unity's home care workers know well. Their visits often brighten the day for their clients. Sadly, the number of people who feel lonely is on the rise. A 2017 survey of 1,980 people by Relationships Australia found that 34% felt isolated and 43% felt isolated some of the time. Recognising those who need social support is about looking for subtle cues that can indicate feelings of depression or anxiety, says Nikki Tepper, MindStep Services Manager at Australian Unity. You might notice a friend, neighbour or relative who appears to be losing engagement in activities that have previously brought them pleasure or pride, such as doing their hair, tending their garden or participating in hobbies, says Nikki. The MindStep program is a mental health initiative that offers 6 weeks of phone-based social support with trained coaches to assist people overcome feelings of isolation, sadness and low self-esteem. But there are other ways to ease loneliness too, says Nikki. If you know someone who is feeling sad or anxious, encourage them to have a discussion with their GP. Community groups such as Men's Shed or Rotary can offer social and practical support too. Volunteering in the community and giving back to others is widely recognised as a key activity that can help people feel connected. It has the advantages of a planned schedule that makes regular contact easier, says Nikki. And that was an article from the Flourish magazine entitled Make Someone's Day.
You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Lynn, thanks for that. Okay, we're going to have a little change now from loneliness to money. What have we got?
Well, this next article concerns good and bad news in pensions, New Start and assets. It's from the Senior magazine of Monday, October 22nd, 2018, entitled Rise, No Surprise with Wages Static. The announcement of an age pension rise of $8.70 for singles and $13.20 for couples has come as no real surprise for Combined Pensioners and Superannuants Association Policy Coordinator Paul Versteege. While one caller to the senior described the rise, due to take effect on September 20th, as a disgrace, as foreboding as it may seem, Mr. Versteege said what pensioners should be looking for is a rise in inflation, a sign that the pension might increase. The news was worse for those receiving the New Start allowance. New Start is always a disappointment, Mr. Versteege said. Half the increase for both singles and couples. One saving grace was Prime Minister Scott Morrison's backflip on raising the age pension qualifying age to 70. However, even at 67, that could mean many years struggling on an inadequate allowance. New Start increased by only $4.40 a fortnight for singles with no children and $3.90 a fortnight for each member of a couple, taking the fortnightly allowance to $595.10 for those aged 60 and over after 9 months, and $496.70 for each member of a couple. There are also changes to the income and assets test for age pensioners. Single homeowners will be able to have $564,000 in assets before their pension is disqualified, up $2,750. For non-homeowners, the figure is $771,000. For couple combined homeowners, the limit rises $4,000 to $848,000, while for non-homeowners, it is $1,055,000, also up $4,000. And that article was concerning the mixed outlook for finances in 2019.
You're tuned to the RPH Network, Lynn Perrott and Dave Jeffrey with you today. Next, we're going to take a look at the subject of mobility. Electric wheelchairs or mobility scooters? If you need one, which is best for you? This article is taken from the Senior newspaper in January this year. While there are essential differences between both types of mobility aids, what is ultimately right for you comes down to your needs. Also, your personal preferences. Now, we're going to outline just a few factors that you might want to consider before deciding. That is a big decision, electric wheelchair or mobility scooter. And we've got four headings here. Mobility scooter or electric wheelchair. Operation and manoeuvrability. Speed and distance. And also acceptance by the rest of the community. First heading, mobility scooter or electric wheelchair. Mobility scooters are designed for people who may be fairly mobile around the home, but who find it difficult to walk long distances. There are a wide range of scooters available, from smaller models that can fit into the boot of the car through to heavy-duty mobile scooters. These are able to navigate steep hills and travel long distances on a single battery charge. Now, electric wheelchairs, they're similar in many ways in that they're designed to assist people who have difficulty walking. However, their smaller turning circle means they are more suited for use indoors. And if you are using it at home, chances are you'll spend a great deal of time on your mobility aid. Electric wheelchairs offer more seating options for comfort, including by reclining the backrest and raising or lowering the footrest. The second heading is operation and manoeuvrability. Electric wheelchairs are operated using a joystick mounted on the armrest. This requires less upper body mobility to control it. On the other hand, mobility scooters are operated using a tiller handle and requires both hands to steer it and control it. Electric wheelchairs have a smaller turning circle than the mobility scooter. Now, while there are small scooters with a tighter turning circle designed for use indoors, you will require more space between furniture to manoeuvre indoors. The third heading now is speed and distance. Electric wheelchairs are limited to a maximum speed of 6 kilometres an hour. They travel up to 30 kilometres on a single charge. This can be affected by such things as the terrain and the weight of the user. If distance is a concern for you, a mobility scooter may be the preferable option. A robust mobility scooter can travel at speeds up to 10 kilometres an hour. They can go distances up to 50 kilometres on a single charge. Again, while the maximum speed and distance depends on terrain, mobility scooters are designed to travel long distances outdoors. While electric wheelchairs can be used outdoors, they are better suited to flats, even terrain and slight slopes such as access ramps. If you need to navigate difficult terrain and hills, a mobility scooter will give you the required power and stability. And the final heading is acceptance. While the best mobility device for you is the one that provides the optimum level of independence and support, there can be a preoccupation that some devices, and therefore users, are more legitimate than others. Whilst it is unfortunate, generally the public may be more accommodating for someone in a wheelchair than in an electric scooter. On the other hand, a mobility scooter may provide less stigma for someone who does not want to be seen as a wheelchair user. There are a range of models available, from sleek, foldable travel mobility scooters to scooters that resemble motorcycles. Now, there's a website here. It says mobilityhq.com.au. I'll say that again in a moment. We're looking there at electric wheelchairs versus mobility scooters. And just a summary, electric wheelchairs are similar in many ways. They assist people with difficulty walking. However, they've got a smaller turning circle. And the distance and the speed that you want to travel is a consideration as well. That website again, mobilityhq.com.au. That article on wheelchairs there taken from the Senior newspaper in January this year. Well, we had to bring sex into it, I guess. This article that says, How Do We Bring Back the Foreplay? Called Off the Record from the B&S section. This is a question. Life is so crazy. I find that my husband and I are always in a hurry, even when we have sex. I really want to make the most of it. Take time to reconnect with him, especially on a sexual level. Any tips? Well, the answer is yes. If you and your partner want to focus on sex, that's great. But the more preparation you do in advance, the better experience it will be. Think about what it is that you specifically want to achieve. Then, gather the tools that you need to make it happen. If slow sex is your number one goal, well, an emphasis on female orgasm, this can't be too bad. In a long-term sexual relationship, you know precisely which buttons to press. But slow sex is an opportunity to explore the areas around that are usually overlooked. You don't need to set yourself any rules about not touching this or do touching that, but the general area is to focus on other erogenous zones. These tend to be ignored. The eyelids, the earlobes, the nape of the neck. Then there's the nipples, the tummy, the base of the spine, and the feet. Take the time to really explore each other's bodies. This is hugely erotic and it makes touch a more meaningful part of your sexual experience. It will help you both to relax. Now, some men are a bit apprehensive about extended foreplay. This is because they worry it can cause them to lose their erections. But as arousal builds, this will return. It is actually good for a man to get used to this process. It stops them getting anxious about occasional erectile failures. This is something that happens to all men at some point, regardless of age. All right, they touch on the subject of props and aids. It says, why not pack some props? Couples kits are becoming quite popular and more readily available. You can find ready-made ones online, places such as hampersfortwo.com.au. Another one is wildsecrets.com.au. I'll say both of those again at the end of this article. Or you might like to create one of your own. Fill it with all the things that you think you may need. Items you may want to include a range of scene setters such as candles, sexy underwear and champagne. For the more kinky accessories, you can use lubricant, feathers, blindfolds, massage oils and vibrators. All products aside, the absolute best thing about slow sex is the opportunity for meaning post-coital conversation. It causes connection. You can chat and giggle and have a wonderful time. Well, that article, they're telling us how to bring back the foreplay from the Sunday telly. Now, they spoke about a couple of websites there that can assist you. It was hampers42.com.au and the other one was wildsecrets.com.au. Just mentioning those websites again, if you'd like a little bit of assistance in foreplay, it's hampers42.com.au and there's wildsecrets.com.au. You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Interesting article now. It says the fast way to solve your chocolate equation. So looking at health and diet and something nice later in life. Whenever I'm talking to people about hacking their way to rapid weight loss, I always tell them about what I call the M&M equation. And that is, for every single one of those tiny treats that you eat, you need to run the length of a football field to have any hope of burning off the calories. Yes, that is 100 metres. For a piece of candy that's smaller than a 5-cent piece, that is. Now, according to the company that makes M&Ms, there are around 210 individual chocolates in a 200-gram bag of M&Ms. This means, if you eat the whole lot of them all at once, you'll need to run a whopping 21 kilometres just to break even. And the author says here, who amongst us has never eaten a whole packet of M&Ms? We know we all have. Well, it gets even worse. If you prefer peanut M&Ms as one little sucker, you would need to run the length of 2 footy fields to burn it off. That's the whole point. The secret to weight loss is not exercise. It's simply impossible to exercise hard enough to counteract a bad diet. Now, don't get me wrong. Exercise is good for so many things. You'll gain muscle, improve your cardiovascular fitness. Good for mental well-being, to name just a few. But dropping kilos in a hurry simply is not one of them. The simple truth is that weight loss begins at the end of your fork. Now, the maths to losing weight is incredibly simple. If you burn less calories than you consume, you will not lose any weight. So, the fastest way to lose weight, what is it? The clue is right there in the question. It is fasting. From Hugh Jackman to Eddie Maguire, it seems that everyone is turning to fasting. They're using this as a way to drop quickly and improve their general health. Now, we know it all sounds terrifying, but fasting is not the same as starving yourself. No, it is more about blocking out a part of the day in which you won't be consuming calories. In fact, just getting back to eating like our grandparents did. They did not eat all day and deep into the night until their heads hit the pillow. Today, the average person has more than 15 individual eating events every single day. This is from your first cup of creamy coffee in the morning to the last sweet treat after dinner. Fasting interrupts the near-continuous consumption of calories. It forces your body instead to use its stored energy. And don't worry, we've all got lots of that. Helping you lose weight is fast. And it's not just weight loss. Fasting is so beneficial for so many other reasons. Every time we ask our bodies to process food, it puts pressure on our internal organs. Also, the digestive system. It was not so long ago that our ancestors hunted for their meals, and with no guarantee of success. So our bodies are actually programmed to go for long periods without calories. This is the reason that we all store fat in the first place. Fasting gives our bodies the break that we need to repair and regenerate them. It allows us to burn off that excess fat that we've been storing. It does not need to be extreme. In fact, it can be as simple as having an earlier dinner and giving your body a couple of hours before you go to bed. Oh yes, and staying away from those M&Ms at night when you're watching telly. Something that will concern many of us, in fact most of us, is home care as we age a little. We're going to look now at four tips for choosing the right home care package. And this looks at four main headings. Make a list of your needs. Number two is ask plenty of questions. Thirdly, talk to your assessor. And the fourth one is review the provider's fees. This comes from the February edition of the Over 55s newspaper. For many people, home care services offer the right balance between staying independent and getting support when you need it. Australia's home care package system enables you to choose a home care service provider that suits your specific needs. But with greater choice can come greater complexity. The question then becomes, how can you be sure that choosing the right home care provider for you? Well, here are our tips for vetting and selecting a personal care package that works for you. The first heading, make a list of your needs. The first step to choosing the right home care package service provider is to make that list the needs that you have. That's so you have a reference point when you start shopping around. Think about the kind of services and support that you need, as well as things that you'd like to have. Now, these include personal services like health activities, such as bathing, showering, toileting, dressing, mobility, and communication. There's also additional services like physiotherapy, transport to and from social activities, support with cooking and so on. There's staff availability, day, weekend or evening services. And any language, religious or cultural expectations. Now here, you've got to keep in mind that some providers offer a greater range of services. They can also offer more flexibility or affordability than others do. Second heading is ask plenty of questions. All home care providers are required to provide care plans, train staff, and a range of services. But there can be significant differences here between providers. Asking the right questions will help you find the best provider for your situation. Now, here are some key questions that you should ask. How long have you been serving the community? What processes do you have in place to make sure the quality of care is up to standards? Can you offer information, resources, or technology to help me live in a home longer? Do you employ your own staff or do you use agency staff? What level of training do your care workers and staff need to have? Can you provide testimonials? Can you vary your care plan to suit your changing needs? For example, I might need more care when a family member is away or after a stay in hospital. Can you use your current allied health practitioners? Now remember that you have the right to decide where and how you spend your government subsidy or private funds. So what you've got to do? Set a home care provider that should be ready and willing to answer those questions for you. Now the third heading, talk to your assessor. Before you can choose a home care provider, you'll need to be assessed by the Aged Care Assessment Team, that is, ACAT. An ACAT assessor will visit your home to find out about your needs and assess your level of help that you need. Your assessor will have plenty of useful information about home care agencies in your area.
They can often make a recommendation based on your circumstances. And the final heading is review the provider's fees. Fees charged by home care providers vary greatly. Make sure that prospective providers' fees are transparent. Make sure that you understand what level of service you get for those fees. Ask for a full list of fees and keep in mind that some providers charge additional fees outside the standard costs. Such things as management fees, administration fees, and other out-of-pocket expenses. Ask if you will be able to see a monthly invoice outlining any unspent funds accrued. This is so you know exactly what is being spent on your home care. Some providers can also offer support on ways to spend your funds. That is so you can get the most out of your home care package. Now, this is very important. There is a lot of information out there and a lot of help available, but I don't think many of us really understand it. One of the reasons why, as with most government organisations, it's fairly complicated. What we're going to do in future programs, we'll have a look at this. The healthcare package is available. Quick question now. Do compression stockings actually work? Well, the answer is they sure do, especially if you are a woman. When Aussie scientists asked a group of female soccer players to wear either normal socks or compression stockings, that is, tight-fitting socks that enhance the blood flow during a match, they found that those in compression gear experienced increased agility and muscle endurance, and significantly they reduced fatigue. In fact, the effects were so impressive, the researchers believe compression clothing could be considered a performance enhancer. So, if you're looking to smash your PB, compression tights could give you the edge you need. There you are, especially you ladies. Compression stockings really do work. Oh, here's something good. A new drug to help combat obesity is now approved for use in Australia. Contrave was intended to be used alongside a reduced calorie diet and increased exercise. Now, I must say here, this thing sounds wonderful. The pill affects the central nervous system. It both suppresses the appetite and reduces food cravings. It's been shown in clinical trials to help people lose on average 5% of their body weight. And there's a footnote here to finish this article that says almost 28% of adults in Australia are obese. Well, that sounds a bit too good to be true. This drug helps you lose weight. It's called Contrave, C-O-N-T-R-A-V-E. We'll also try and find out a little more about that and let you know in our next program. You've been listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. My name is Dave Jeffrey, and I'd also like to say a big thanks to our very hard-working reader, Lynn Perrott. Good to have you with us. Bye now. Look forward to your company again soon.